Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is going to be about a number of security topics and a lot of website stuff. So let's get started. First off, you should be aware that Google now has what's called an artificial intelligence assistant that is capable of sounding and acting like a real human. And this has a lot of people, rightly so, I think, freaked out. And they're freaked out because this is going to open up a whole new avenue for fraud and abuse. What they show in their demo, they did a recent demo. This was back in May. And this demo literally was a phone call where the Google AI called up a hair salon and talked to the hair salon on behalf of the Google user, because this was supposed to be the Google AI assistant, right? The personal assistant of the person who had programmed it was saying, find me a haircut appointment within the hours of this to this on this day. And so the Google AI called the hair salon and talked to a real person, and it really sounded like a real legitimate conversation that would have occurred between two human beings. There was no indication to the person who was answering the phone calls at the hair salon that this was an AI that had called in. So I'll link this so that you can actually see the video yourself. But this is very concerning, in my opinion, because it really opens up the opportunity for these AIs to be programmed to entrap human beings or to perpetrate attacks on humans. And some of those attacks could be something as simple as, if you have enough recordings of someone's voice, you can then program the AI to sound like them. And then now, because of the sophistication of the AI, they could be making phone calls on behalf, you know, pretending as though they are that person. So this brings identity theft to a whole new level. This is now where somebody could be making a phone call and pretending that they are you, right? They could program this AI to make phone calls and literally have them sound like you and pretend to be you and certainly sound like a legitimate human being. But then, of course, do things to destroy you, destroy your reputation, destroy your business, or just create other problems, such as, boy, you can imagine that this is something that maybe a stalker might use to try to destroy somebody's life. So it's very concerning to me, and this brings to mind something that Elon Musk has been talking about for a very long time, which is that he thinks that, and he's not the only one who thinks this, he thinks that AI, which is artificial intelligence, is actually the biggest threat to humanity that exists at this point, and that lawmakers are not taking a proactive approach to creating legislation that would regulate AI. And in a related vein, there have actually been a significant number, not a small number, of Google employees, a pretty significant number of Google employees who have quit recently over the fact that they are disturbed that Google has been engaging in contracts with the government to develop AI with the explicit purpose of using it as a weapon to destroy human beings. So, you know, if we think that the NSA has too much power, if we think that the federal government already has too much power, if we think that there are inadequate protections over the meager remnants of our constitutional rights, then this is into a whole new level of tyranny when, not if, but when this technology becomes abused and used outside of a legitimate warfare scenario. And I think you all know that with the Indefinite Detention Act, otherwise known as NDAA, anyone, American citizen or not, even on domestic soil, could be, quote, accused of terrorism, and therefore they have no constitutional rights. And now this would certainly be able to be used quite easily. I mean, there are plenty of national security advisory letters that go out every day. And these are effectively gag orders for an unconstitutional search and seizure of data against U.S. personnel. So this is just the latest alarming thing. And as I said, there's a whole bunch of Google employees who literally quit over this because they're so concerned about how evil this is and how much it's going on to the slippery slope straight to the only logical conclusion that could happen with AI in the hands of unregulated bureaucrats. You know, and then what happens when the code gets hacked? You know, that's going to happen because code always gets hacked. Well, anyways, the next topic has to do with content management systems getting hacked. And what are content management systems? They are the basis of certain websites. In fact, I would say the vast majority of websites out there are now content management systems. So the only websites that would not be qualified as a content management system are static, plain HTML systems. And I'm not really aware of anyone using a static HTML website anymore. Those died many years ago. So if we then understand that pretty much everyone is using a content management system, and then you extrapolate that into the fact that hundreds of thousands of them are hacked at any one point in time, it's disturbing. Because on many times on this show, I've talked about how for less than $100 a year of supplies, and I say supplies because your labor cost is going to be separate from that, but for less than $100 a year in terms of subscriptions for the ability to secure your content management system, you can have a secure content management system. So there's really no justification whatsoever to not have a secured website that has the protections in place to prevent it from getting hacked and compromised. Now, another component of that is that you need to make sure that all of the components of the website are also updated. So this isn't just extensions. It's also the operating system of the content management system itself, whether that be Joomla or WordPress or Drupal, whatever it happens to be. But the templates that are there, literally each one of the components that is being used in that website, as well as its baseline underlying infrastructure, needs to simply be patched. So we're talking about security patching here. So this is really, it's just like a computer. You have to do your security patches, and then you have to have the tools in place to mitigate active attacks and threats. And that's that $100 a year, less than $100 a year package of tools that will make that possible. So really, if you have a website and you are not actively patching it and maintaining it for these things, then maybe that's something you ought to look into and certainly start asking some questions about, especially when we know that people's websites are getting hacked and compromised and then they're being used to hack other people, such as what we talked about in the last show, which was about the Shalom Center's website being hacked and compromised. So on this same topic, I recently had to deal with a situation where an organization was, in my opinion, they were intentionally misled about how their system worked. So this organization was misled intentionally by the salespeople at a website hosting company, but it's really their proprietary hosting product called Demosphere. That is the name of the company, Demosphere. this, their product was stated that, okay, if you host your website with us, then everything is secure. That was basically the nuts and bolts of it, is every time there was conversation about security and whether or not things were secure, the statement was always, yes, everything is secure. All the transactions, everything is secure. There was never disclosure about what isn't secure. And I think that this is what's called fraud, because when you look at the Federal Trade Commission law, the FTC law says that if you intentionally neglect to disclose a material fact, then that is criminal fraud. So in the vein that you're talking to a prospective customer in the sales process, and they are concerned that the website and its content will be presented and secured and presented in a secure manner, and then they're told, yes, everything is secure, but then really when the rubber meets the road, it's not secure, I would characterize that as fraud. Now, is anybody going to report them to the FTC, and is the FTC going to care about prosecuting them? Oh, I highly doubt it, because there's no money involved with that. The last time the FTC actually went after somebody, it was Goldman Sachs, because they could do a huge fine on Goldman Sachs, and they did. I think that fine at that point in time was over $1 billion that they got from Goldman Sachs, and yes, they got them for exactly that criminal fraud that I was talking about with regards to failure to disclose a material fact prior to purchase. Because if you don't disclose a material fact to a prospective customer prior to purchase, then they can't make an informed and fair and open and honest purchasing decision. So to go to the rest of this to explain why it's not secure, I got involved and was talking to them about, okay, well, how does this transaction work? How does this traffic work from here to there? And what I ended up finding out was that they have certain functions on the website that function off of a secure subdomain that they own. So if you were to host your website there, let's call it vanity.com, because these are generally referred to as vanity domains. So your customized website domain name is called a vanity domain. So I'm going to call it vanity.com for sake of discussion here. In that case, if you hosted there, then your website vanity.com would not be presented over HTTPS. Therefore, that leaves open all the problems with the website not being hosted over HTTPS, which I'll get into in a moment. So they then also disclosed, finally, after I was getting into the technical weeds about the matter, that for the components, the transactions that they perceived, so in their venue, not in what the customer deemed, okay, everything needed to be secure. But from their perspective, from Demosphere's perspective, they said, well, no, for these transactions where someone is going to be doing what we consider to be secure, we will redirect them to a portion of our secure website, which is hosted on our domain name. So while those portions of the transactions may be secure, you have a fundamental problem in that you've now redirected your customers to a different website. It certainly looks like a different website when you look at the URL. I'm not saying that it's not customized, but anybody who understands security, you have to start having question marks and say, okay, wait, I went to Amazon. Why am I being redirected someplace else? In fact, there's an awful lot of websites that have what's called redirection awareness warnings. And they will literally give you a warning that says, okay, you're clicking on a link that is going to take you someplace else that is no longer this website. And I'm warning you that if you continue, you're going to be leaving our website. And so these are redirection warnings. Well, there is no such redirection warning in place with the vanity.com website hosting at Demosphere. So somebody, though, will decide, oh, what the heck is, why is this happening? I clicked on this to do this transaction, and why am I getting redirected to another website? Do I actually know that that's a legitimate redirection, or is it a fake website? Do I trust this process? There's all of these questions that can and will come up. So let's talk a little bit about why you need to be, not just want, but why you need to be presenting your website over HTTPS. First of all, let me say that there are zero reasons why you wouldn't. You can get a free certificate from letsencrypt.org. In fact, there are hundreds of website hosting companies that literally have the free SSL certificates for HTTPS built into their website hosting, and they generate these free certificates from letsencrypt.org. Okay, so if we can now have an HTTPS website for a one-time setup plus free certificates in an ongoing manner, why the heck wouldn't you? I mean, why wouldn't you have security at that point? All right, so now that I've just basically crushed this whole thing of why what are the detractions? Oh my gosh, why wouldn't I have? Because it's too expensive. No, it's not too expensive. It's actually very easy to do. In terms of a content management system, it's usually as simple as turning on force HTTPS redirection, installing the certificate, and then simply making sure that all of your content is actually coming from that website itself where it is secured, or where it's being presented from another SSL secured site. So one of the big problems that lesser web developers will encounter when they try to go to HTTPS is that they find that they've used a bunch of content from insecure sources. So then your web browser will pop up these messages and alert you, as the end user of this website, will alert you. And of course, this then means your customers will see what's called mixed content warning messages. It will effectively say, hey, this website is not secure because it's experiencing mixed content. And mixed content is when you visit a website and you're simultaneously being presented insecure and secure content. So it's being simultaneously presenting content from HTTP sources and HTTPS sources. When in reality, if you want the browser to give your visitors to the website an appropriate experience where they know that they are accurately interacting with your website and not a fake lookalike website where then data can be stolen or machines can be infected. And this is oftentimes what happens with Wi-Fi pineapples. Then that total SSL experience has to be there. All of the content has to be presented over HTTPS. And it has to be done with appropriate certificates. And all of the modern browsers look into this. They all care about this nowadays. And end users are getting savvier and savvier and savvier, and they know to pay attention to these warning messages presented to them by browsers. They are also getting savvier to things like spear phishing and business email compromise in general. So people are getting savvier about what they're clicking on and what the URLs actually say on things. So if you're setting up your organization to have website hosting at a place whose infrastructure fundamentally causes redirections and does not present your content over a secure mechanism, then that would be very concerning to me. One other thing on top of this, which is that most of the search engines are now delisting or decreasing the quality of your website in search results because it's not being presented over HTTPS. So if you care anything whatsoever about the quality of interaction that your end users have with your website and your search engine ranking, then you need to make sure that the website is being presented over HTTPS. So taking this whole topic one step further, let's talk about how TLS 1.3 is coming. And I think in many ways it might already be here. And in May, Chrome made TLS 1.3 mandatory unless you went into your Chrome settings and changed it back to utilize the lower version of TLS. And why this is so darned important is because TLS 1.3 is necessary as a security algorithm. What the heck is, let me first take a step back and say, what in the heck is TLS.3 and why do I care? TLS 1.3 is really the encryption algorithm that should be getting utilized between your browser and any website or any content that is being presented over the HTTPS channel. Now, a lot of people talk about SSL, but in reality, the encryption protocol being utilized is TLS 1.3. So this is not just websites. This is you open your Outlook client and it talks to the email server. You open your Skype client and it talks to the Skype server. Right, so all of these various little services that you use on your computer as well that run over something other than port 443, they are also utilizing a flavor of HTTPS. It's just HTTPS running on a different port. And it all needs to be protected using the security cipher algorithm called TLS 1.3. So SSL technically is actually a deprecated algorithm. Yeah, if you don't want to get too much into the technical weeds on that. But anyways, that's what TLS is TLS 1.3 is now the most secure web browser algorithm out there. And it just happens to be used for other things as well. So again, why did it get released? Why was TLS 1.3 released? Well, it was released because it addresses underlying fundamental shortcomings in the prior versions of that security cipher, that security algorithm. So let's talk a little bit about what is getting deprecated, what's getting removed from TLS 1.3 so that you can maybe assess how that might impact you. So in TLS 1.3, they remove all of the static RSA and Diffie-Hellman cipher suites. Well, what is that? Does that mean that RSA is dead? Does that mean that Diffie-Hellman is dead? No. What it means is the static RSA and Diffie-Hellman cipher suites are dead, meaning you shouldn't use them anymore. Again, the word deprecated is what we that's what we call it in the technology industry. We say those algorithms are now deprecated. Those cipher suites are now deprecated. You should not be using them anymore because they don't meet the minimum security standards anymore. Now there are RSA and Diffie-Hellman cipher suites where PFS, which is called perfect forward secrecy, where PFS is being utilized. So without PFS, what happens is that an attacker can obtain the RSA private key or other pre-shared key off of a server, and then they can decrypt all of the SSL TLS traffic sent to and from that server. So this is a major, major man-in-the-middle attack. Major big deal. So it comes down to things like session replay. Because it's a static RSA cipher or a static Diffie-Hellman cipher, because it doesn't change, then it stays static and consistent over a period of time. So once that gets compromised, then it can be used to capture a whole ton of data going forward. But with perfect forward secrecy, known as PFS, every session uses a unique key, which means that a single compromised session key does not adversely impact every other session out there. All right. And so TLS 1.3 also overhauls the session handshake process. And this changes the deprecated TLS 1.3 version negotiation field. And this means that all messages after the server hello are being encrypted. And what is the server hello? The server hello is basically where your browser says, hey, it's me, I'm this browser, and I have this session. And then the server says, okay, I will start to talk to you. That's the server hello. So what I mean by this is where we say that in TLS 1.3, all messages after the server hello are then encrypted. This is a big deal because once that browser has made the initial attempt to start to have a negotiated conversation with the web server, then all of that traffic is also then encrypted, as opposed to how it previously functioned, where the hello would happen and then the whole handshake process would happen. And then finally, after the handshake process was completed, then the data transfer would be encrypted. But the handshake process itself was not previously encrypted, so this was a bit problematic. So these are some huge security improvements. And if you have certain, let's say you have a web server, well, this is one of those things where I would suggest that you use a tool called, I know that there are tools for Linux servers or NGINX, but there is a tool for IIS as well that is an IIS encryption algorithm setting tool. And it's free, and I've tested it several times and been extremely happy with its capabilities and output. Trying to set up a web server such that it does not utilize or does not present and instead rejects all of the deprecated old security ciphers and algorithms is important. It's better to actually have, and it's also difficult without this fancy little tool. So I definitely recommend you go get the fancy little tool if you have an IIS server. So the reason that this is important is because it's better to reject the establishment of a session with an insecure browser. A good example of that is, let's say you've got a really old version of Firefox that's installed, or you're using Internet Explorer and it's not up to date. You know, there's a variety of old, ancient, insecure browsers that are not patched. And so if they're not patched and they're not using the right settings, then they are either not going to be aware of something like TLS 1.3 or not have the capabilities of it or not be set to utilize it and negotiate with it properly. Of course, the solution to that is to stop using old, ancient, dead operating systems and upgrade your browsers. It's, you know, it's generally that simple, at least on the end user side. But on the server side, you don't want to have somebody interacting with your web server content, whether you think it could create a risk or not, if they are connecting with an insecure browser. Because when they're connecting with an insecure browser, then they don't have the tools to know whether their session is being hijacked, is there a man-in-the-middle attack going on. They just don't have that data, and your responsibility as the manager and administrator of that web server or services being presented over HTTPS is to make sure that that is secure to the point where visitors have that ability with their browser to know that their session is not getting hijacked. So notice that I didn't say anything about, oh, you only need to secure a website if people are sending passwords or financial data or whatever. No, no, that's all baloney pop. Total baloney pop there. You need to be presenting a secure website regardless. And if nothing else, do it out of selfish reasons such as, gee, I don't want to have my website delisted by the search engines because it's not secure. Okay. One other thing to be considering here is saying, okay, oh my gosh, is TLS 1.3 going to break standard inline proxies that do deep packet inspection? And the answer is no. out of band proxies, yes, but not standard inline proxies. So this is why it's so darn important to be utilizing a good and properly programmed and functional enough security appliance at the network layer. Well, that's it for today, and I hope you enjoyed the show.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you